Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Surveillance is going to be extremely important, and that's going to be everybody in the state of Texas is going to have to be involved in that.
Dr. Terry Hensley is Assistant Director of the Texas A&M Veterinary Diagnostic Lab.
Leading the information right now, it's USDA and Texas Animal Health Commission.
Okay.
And I think everyone so far in the state is working together. Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service has been very involved. We did an online talk here a few weeks ago. There were 4,000 people that signed up for that to hear what the current status is, what is New World Screwworm. We've got a population now, even of ranchers, that have no idea. They weren't alive back then.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The House Ag Subcommittee on Livestock, Dairy, and Poultry holding a hearing Tuesday focusing on the National Animal Health Lab Network. And Subcommittee Chair Tracy Mann of Kansas highlighted the importance of the network in detecting and responding to foreign animal disease threats. Since its launch 23 years ago with 12 labs, it's now expanded to over 60 facilities across the U.S., including the Kansas State Vet Diagnostic Lab. Panelists describe how it supports detection of high-risk outbreaks like avian flu, screwworm, and African swine fever, and how labs are working with USDA's new bio and agro defense facility in Kansas. Mann also noted the recent passage of the One Big Beautiful Bill, which allocates $10 million annually on top of existing funds, total $233 million in new animal health resources to support diagnostics, research, and disease surveillance. Well, new research shows beef on dairy calves now make up nearly a quarter of all feedlot placements. According to a University of Tennessee analysis, the number of these crossbred calves has risen from 2.9 million back in 2016 to an estimated 5.2 million last year. U.S. dairy herd, though, holding steady at 9.2 million cows. The number of dairy-fed cattle in feedlots has dropped. Fewer straight-bred dairy cattle are entering the beef chain, and it suggests more dairy farms are using beef genetics to breed calves for feedlots. With the beef cow herd in decline, these beef-on-dairy crosses filling the gap. In 2024, the calves estimated to make up 23% of placements. And as demand grows and herd rebuilding remains slow, analysts expect beef on dairy use to remain high or even increase. A new USDA Economic Research Service report finds that non-family farms operate significantly more land than family-owned operations. From 2018 through 2022, small, non-family farms averaged 697 acres compared to just 220 acres for small family farms. Now, among larger farms, non-family operators with over a million in gross cash income manage nearly 5,000 acres on average, while large-scale family farms average 3,200. ERS defines non-family farms as operations where the majority ownership is held by people not related to the principal operator. And while these operations make up only 2% of all U.S. farms, they account for 13% of total ag production. Finally, according to a recent report from Ag America, proposed changes to the H-2A farm worker visa program could help ease ongoing labor shortages, boost farm loan potential as well. Current rules, rising enforcement, and high compliance costs have kept participation low. Only around 10% of the ag workforce uses that H-2A program. Now, labor shortages driving some farms to operate with up to 60% fewer workers during peak season. Ag America says the disruptions raise production risk and make it harder to secure financing. It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Today's hearing, entitled Safeguarding U.S. Agriculture, the role of the National Animal Health Laboratory Network.
Kansas Representative Tracy Mann is chair of the House Ag Subcommittee on Livestock, Dairy, and Poultry.
I'm excited to chair this hearing of the House Agriculture Committee Subcommittee on Livestock, Dairy, and Poultry, where we will focus on the important work of the National Animal Health Laboratory Network, or NALT. As a fifth generation Kansas farm kid, I grew up riding pens and doctoring sick cattle at my family's preconditioning feedlot, and I intimately understand and appreciate the vital role the animal health plays in all of livestock and our poultry operations. The National Animal Health Laboratory Network is a critical piece of our ability to respond to and mitigate foreign animal diseases. Originally comprised of 12 laboratories when it was created in 2002, the NALL network has grown to include over 60 state and university laboratories, including the Kansas State University Veterinary Diagnostics Laboratory in Manhattan, Kansas, my district and alma mater. These labs are strategically placed across the United States to support animal agriculture by developing and increasing the capabilities and capacities to support early detection, rapid response, and appropriate recovery from high-consequence animal diseases. Put simply, they are the first line of our defense. These labs do not operate in a vacuum. The NALL network is successful because of partnerships between federal, state, and university-associated animal health laboratories and experts. This partnership is critical to response efforts when foreign animal diseases are detected, such as highly pathogenic avian influenza, New World screwworm, African swine fever, and unfortunately, so many more. Today, you will hear from a panel of experts who all work at NALL's laboratories. These experts will be able to share pertinent information about the critical work they do, whether it be tracking the New World screwworm outbreak in Mexico, identifying the move of high path entry dairy cattle in Texas, working with the National Bio and Agro Defense Facility in Kansas, or crucial swine testing in Iowa. This hearing could not come at a better time to highlight the work of the NALL laboratories and talk about the need for additional resources. As of 2 weeks ago, funding for the NALL, as well as funding for the National Animal Disease Preparedness and Response Program and National Animal Vaccine and Veterinary Countermeasures Bank, was substantially increased in the One Big Beautiful Bill. The One Big Beautiful Bill included $233 million per year for the three-legged stool, with $10 million per year directed towards the NALL laboratories, which is on top of existing discretionary federal spending. This funding will increase diagnostic capabilities, improve research, assist in disease surveillance, and strengthen our overall capacity as a nation to prevent, detect, and mitigate foreign animal diseases. I'm proud of the work of this committee did to shore up our animal health resources and protect the herds and flocks that bring so much value to our producers and national security. I look forward to hearing from our witnesses about the work they do day in and day out in their roles with the National Animal Health Laboratory Network. I'm excited to hear about how the increased funding will help their operation of these laboratories, which foreign animal diseases they see as the most consequential, and how we as Congress can be good partners to them. Again, thank you all for being here today.
At the hearing on Tuesday, panelists described how that network supports detection of high-risk outbreaks like avian flu, screwworm, and African swine fever. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Well, let's talk about conditions first.
Mark Brown is with Plains Cotton Growers, headquartered in Lubbock, the hub of the largest cotton-producing region in the U.S.
Being an interesting year in the fact that, you know, I guess we've pretty much become accustomed out here on the high plains in recent years to a lot of excessive heat and a lot of lack of moisture, a lot of drought conditions. Certainly the last 3 years we've experienced that. And for some people, it's been at least 4 years of drought in a row. And so it's been very difficult. We finally seem to have kind of broken away from that pattern just a little bit, Tony, and we've had some good moisture. Now, in the beginning stages of this crop, it was very challenging to get a crop established because a lot of that moisture came with a big price of a lot of hailstorms and a lot of high wind damage. And so we did see a lot of storms that were very damaging to the crop. We started out with a reduced acreage, somewhat reduced from what we would normally see out here. And in addition to that, we had a lot of acres that were destroyed either by wind and sand damage or by hail. In those southern counties, some of those people were far enough along in terms of a planting deadline that they were able to go back in and reestablish a cotton crop. And so there is some replant cotton in the area, particularly further south. And, of course, our northern counties, that May 31st deadline is a pretty hard and fast deadline for them. And if it gets any later than that, then they've got to switch to an alternative crop. And so with all of that being said, and with the fact that we've had pretty good moisture across the area in the last month and rain showers have continued for the most part into July, we've got some areas of the high plains that we're going into bloom on this cotton crop with pretty much a full soil moisture profile. And so that has been extremely helpful because we know that we're dealing with low cotton prices. And it is helpful not to have to spend that money on irrigation if we can avoid that. And so that's been a very welcome change. Also, in terms of temperatures, let me say that real quickly. The month of May in Lubbock, we only experienced 2 days of 100 degree or higher weather. And in the month of June, we had 2 days. And through mid-July, we did not record a 100-degree day, and so that has been helpful on getting this crop off to a start. If we look at the variability of the crop, as I said, on those later planted fields down to the south, we see cotton that just is a few inches tall, maybe just beginning to square. And I would say in most of the counties that I'm working in, we have anywhere from matchhead square up to early bloom. And, now, you know, we like to talk about July 4th blooms, but I would say in all of my years working with cotton and scouting fields, you know, that, those July 4th blooms, they do occur, but they are, I would say, more of a rarity than commonplace. And, so I would say that, those initial plantings that, we're at or very near early bloom, I'd say we're probably pretty much on time as we move into the middle part of July.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Uncertainty is the word for 2025.
That's Kansas State Livestock Marketing Economist Dr. Glenn Tonser.
We are in the middle of July, and I was hoping I'd be using that word less, but I think it still applies a lot. And particularly on the supply side, we have sort of known domestic supply tightening, and it looks like that might get ramped up for two different reasons. Is the ongoing discussion around screwworm. You know, listeners here probably are well aware of the adjustments in imports from Mexico and the risk of screwworm to our own herd, as well as tariff announcements to Brazil specifically, and then more broader what the beef import situation might look like. You could pretty easily make an argument that the herd is known to be small, and some of those adjustments might make it even smaller from a beef availability perspective. So I think that's at play. I want to interject, though, I was in San Diego this past week for the summer business meetings, doing some beef checkoff work, oriented around the meat and man monitor, report out and proposal for renewal and so forth. And there is notable producer optimism. So industry leaders, state beef councils, and so forth are the ones that are typically at those meetings. And when you put a bow around what I just said, there is net optimism, but some, I'll call it a cautious tone with it, because everybody knows there's a lot of money at stake in the industry now. I want to interject that here because we've had quite a bit of a run-up in the cattle market, and that shows up in the producer sentiment.
But for many producers, the sentiment is sour. Mark Brown is with Plains Cotton Growers, talks about supplemental relief.
The sign-up period for that was announced last week, and we know that sign-up began on July the 10th. So that is something that has been much needed, this supplemental disaster relief program. And you may see the initials SDRF. again, announced last week by the Secretary of Agriculture. And this comes from an allocation or an appropriation of funds to help out with a natural occurring disasters, both in the years of 2023 as well as the 2024 crop season. Now, in our area, we had a lot of drought in both of those years. And in 2023, most all of our counties are going to qualify under the drought, automatic drought trigger. In 2024, we have several counties that may not have qualified automatically for drought. But if somebody had an insurance indemnity, then that's something to check into and go back and look at the purpose for the disaster, something such as high winds or excessive heat, because, for example, excessive heat is one of the things on the list in terms of natural disaster. This certainly limited our yield potential out here in those 2 years. So this is available for 2023 and 24, and in this first stage, it will be based on indemnified losses of the yield potential of the crop. So producers will be receiving pre-filled applications from the FSA offices in each county, and they need to look at those, match those up with their numbers, sign and verify that, and sign the purpose of the indemnified loss, and then get that back into the FSA for the distribution of that money. And so that is something that will allow some money to flow into this economy, which is much needed with the input costs that we're dealing with and with the low commodity prices that we're facing today.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The witnesses that we have here have over 20 years of experience with growing to include over 60 labs that make up our detection system for animal disease control.
Ranking member on the House Ag Subcommittee on Livestock, Dairy, and Poultry, California dairy producer Jim Costa.
As I always like to say, food is a national security issue. It is, and we should address it in that fashion. The laboratory network plays key roles in ensuring we have a safe and secure food supply chain for all Americans at their dinner table every evening. This laboratory network is part of that safety response. It's a foundation that allows us to respond rapidly to animal disease outbreaks simultaneously while keeping our food supply chain safe, and that's a challenge. As HIPAATH has gone over recently in different parts of our country, in California, where we have 20% of America's milk production, we've had over 70% infection in our dairy herds, which is critical mass. And, of course, we've got a significant poultry industry as well. And trying to handle the two over the last 18 months, we've had our hands full. But we have an extra effort that is done by our efforts with our state veterinarian, Dr. Jones, who I will introduce in a moment. The only way, though, that we can properly trace and avoid further spread or spillover infection, I think, is if we're able to respond quickly. And that's why I think this hearing is so important, and accurately to identify and then use the information to allocate appropriate resources to address the problem. And NAHLN is a great example of which highlights the importance of how federal and state partnerships work together. And I think we have had a good example in California of that partnership working. We have our main level one lab at the University of California, Davis, which has played a critical role in coordinating with the laboratory network by providing resources throughout California and the nation in combating HIPAATH avian flu. And this is just one example that demonstrates the importance of the laboratory network and the role it plays in greater effort of preventing animal disease that are being spread throughout the United States. And these labs talk to each other on a national basis, which is essential. When we have multiple state outbreaks of animal disease, such as the HIPAATH avian influenza, it's absolutely essential that we have centralized operations coordinated across our states. And we're going to hear about that this morning. The role that NAHLN central office plays in combating disease response came into spotlight earlier this year in February I was disappointed to hear with the DOGE efforts that the administration fired a quarter of the employees at the Central Coordinating Office. This has occurred in the middle of a prolonged high-path avian influenza outbreak. I can't think of a worse time to decide to cut these positions when coordinating disease response. Think about it. We've seen uninformed, short-sighted decisions such as this one made, and it's not helpful. And I think we've already seen the impacts of those decisions. I'm glad to hear the chairman talk about the one big. I don't know that we agree that it was beautiful, but that there's additional funding that may allow us to fill the gaps from the cuts that were made in February, because I think that's important. I think we want to get the opinion of our experts, our witnesses, to give opine on that. Let me close by saying that we're supportive of these programs to combat animal disease. It's critical that we work together to continue to support systems such as the laboratory network. I really believe that's critical, along with corresponding research that allows us to create better diagnostic tools and preventive measures, which is utilizing the best available science possible.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
I had the privilege to be the director of the Kansas Veterinary Diagnostic Laboratory and a professor at Kansas State University.
That's Dr. Jamie Radelig, testifying before House Ag Subcommittee on Livestock, Dairy, and Poultry on the National Animal Health Lab Network.
The Kansas Veterinary Diagnostic Laboratory, or KVDL, is the primary and only accredited laboratory in the state of Kansas, located at Kansas State University, a land-grant university. The location at a land-grant university allows for a specialized academic faculty to train future generations and work with clients along with federal partners to serve a diverse range of clients and a broad range of diseases. KVDL has approximately 120 staff, about 25 of those are faculty with various specialties and training. We see over 213 species. We have over 213 species in our database, perform 600 different tests, and approximately 600,000 tests annually. Although a diverse species caseload, the most common is cattle, KVDL is a critical pillar to support the $12.9 billion Kansas livestock industry. An important part of protection of Kansas livestock industry and thus the United States is the relationships and coordination provided by the NALM. NALM is a vital resource and call tree or communication system to protect United States animal agriculture by providing an early warning system for economically important outbreaks and foreign animal diseases, along with new threats such as the New World screwworm, which NALM labs are currently watching for. As stated, the NALM network includes 64 laboratories across the United States, which includes KVDL, a level one laboratory in the network. In addition, there are several federal or parent laboratories that are part of this network, which include the National Veterinary Service Laboratory in Ames, Iowa, the Foreign Animal Disease Diagnostic Lab, Laboratory FADL, currently split between Plum Island, New York, and the National Bio-Agro Defense System facility in Manhattan, Kansas. There is also currently a surveillance laboratory in Puerto Rico for African swine fever. The NALM has built a strong, harmonious relationship between federal, state, and university veterinary diagnostic laboratories with over 20 years of experience in protecting animal agriculture in the United States through surveillance and disease testing. In addition to providing communication, coordination, and funding, NALM also provides standardized testing procedures and laboratory accuracy testing known as proficiency testing. Standardized protocols and proficiency testing provide consistent, trustworthy, and high-capacity testing among all 64 NALM laboratories in critical disease events. FADL, from the NBAF facility, has produced and distributed 800 proficiency test panels for several high-impact diseases, including African swine fever, classical swine fever, foot-mouth disease, Seneca Valley virus, to NALM labs nationwide, including my lab, KVDL. NALM coordination of the state laboratories, funding to support the laboratories, weekly communication calls, standard protocols, and proficiency testing have resulted in a network with redundancy to support each other. KVDL is currently performing overflow testing for California and Colorado. This coordination and overflow testing, when a state laboratory is overwhelmed, is directed by the NALM. The federal funding appropriated to NALM that is transferred to state laboratories in the network and for those laboratories is often used to support equipment purchases, service contracts, software, informational technology upgrades, travel for training, outbreak exercises, which are important in preparation for us, and salary support for our staff. The funding makes a huge impact on the VDL operations and is very appreciated to help support our laboratory.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
We're involved. There's a weekly call between Texas Animal Health Commission, Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, ourselves, Texas Department of State Health Services, and the USDA's Veterinary Services staff in Texas. And I think that's very important. So we're all hearing what the most current information is about where that screwworm is and what's potentially being done.
Dr. Terry Hensley with the Texas A&M Vet Lab.
Money has been, I think, given to Mexico to try to retrofit a fruit fly plant down there. That's going to take time. There's efforts to start a plant there in Mission, at least to be able to rear some of the flies that come from Mexico or Panama for release. But all of these things take time.